Views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of KLAY or those who advertise their products or services on this station.
Welcome to Ask an Atheist, where you get to ask a rotating cast and crew of atheists your questions. We are a call-in show. You can call us at 253-584-1480 for any questions. My name is Becky, and today with me are Rich. How you doing, Rich?
I'm awesome. How are you today?
I'm fine, thanks. And good. Beth. Beth, how are you?
Absolutely fantastic. Thank you.
So, did you guys know that there are only 41 days until we believe that the backpedaling begins, but 40 days until some believe that the rapture will occur?
Zombies!
Yay!
What are we talking about? We are talking about Family Radio. A crew from an organization called Family Radio have been advertising that they believe that in 40 days the rapture will occur, Jesus will return, and we at Ask an Atheist believe that 41 days from now there will have to be some backpedaling, some explanation as to why Jesus has not returned. Beth, you've been collecting pictures from some of our listeners and viewers about what are these pictures consist of?
Well, actually, there's quite a span of different sort of advertising techniques that are being implemented, but a lot of them are sort of very general, white with red lettering or black, the universe sort of thing, with May 21st, 2011, the end of the world will come. They all have the same information, but we found them in flyers that are being left on people's cars. There are giant Winnebagos that have been wrapped with this imagery, and then there are, you know, the normal billboards. And there's even a guy who sort of took it upon himself to join in and was advertising from a van and was advertising for free books, which he didn't actually have. He was just trying to get people to talk to him about the event. But there's a lot of different stuff going on all across the country and actually across the world. We've had stuff from Dublin, different areas, Germany, I believe we found one. So they're popping up left and right here.
And now, Rich, have you seen any of these vans or billboards or posters?
There is actually a billboard in Seattle on Elliott Avenue, just a few blocks from my apartment. You can find that really easy because it's just a few blocks from the Church of Scientology. So just on the other side of the Church of Scientology on Elliott Bay, there's one of these billboards in Seattle.
Is Family Radio challenging Scientologists to denounce their ways and join us for or join Family Radio crews when Jesus returns on May 21st?
My understanding is they are a group of people who believe in predetermination, which means everyone who can be saved is already saved or there's no way. So their message really, according to what I've studied, is that what they're saying really can't change whether you make it or not. They're just letting you know.
I see. Well, we have heard from one of our listeners, Colin, has seen several vehicles with car wraps in Alexandria, Virginia, and he emailed us at askanatheist.tv to say, well, I think that the backpedaling has already begun because they used to be parked on the lawn of a house, and now he doesn't see them anymore. So he believes that they've been taken away and kind of shoved to the side. I challenge Colin on that and think, well, maybe their end-of-the-world spread-the-word road trip has already begun.
Yeah, they're riding a convoy across the USA for Jesus. That's what I think.
I totally agree. They're not going to give up. They will, as the day approaches, they will get more and more intense that it's going to happen. And I have a certain degree of fear of what's going to happen afterwards because that's where the thing could turn into a suicide cult.
Hmm. Yeah, that is actually.
I have that fear in the back of my mind. I hope that's not in their cards, but that could be an out.
Well, you're listening to Ask an Atheist, where we here believe that the rapture will not occur on May 21st. The Family Radio organization has set up a website, wecanknow.com, believing that they can know, they do absolutely know that Jesus will return. And we at Ask an Atheist have set up a sister site called wecantknow.com. And if there are any listeners out there that have seen any of these billboards, or if you have seen any of these billboards or given out a flyer or accepted a flyer, give us a call at 253-584-1480. Tell us about it. We have some emails from some of our listeners. We have, let's see, Angelo has talked to us about his experience as an atheist. Beth, would you like to read Angelo's email?
Sure. Angelo, who evidently also lives in the internet, we didn't get a city from him. He says, I'm an atheist and I'm married to a Lutheran woman. We have plenty of disagreements on the subject of religion, obviously, but most of the disagreements are in the area of raising our daughter with or without religion. I would just like some opinions from you guys regarding this problem. Thank you. Well, thank you for emailing us, Angelo, in the first place. This is one of the most difficult questions that we get asked because it has to do with your personal relationship. So much of this has to do with, you know, the idiosyncrasies of your dynamic with your wife and that sort of thing. What do you guys think? What would you say?
First thing I would do is recommend the episode that we did on that very subject, because we covered a whole lot of the details of that and more than we can probably answer now. It was a full hour that we talked about that. I think Beth was here. I think Libby was here. I was on the panel as well. And we talked about a lot of those things, but that's going to be one of those areas where it's just going to be difficult. What I would recommend is address the thought process behind rather than the facts in front. You know, I'm not going to argue the facts because we're going to tie up on that. But let's go back and look, is this logical? Is it critical thinking? If the thinking doesn't work, then we're teaching our child to think illogically. Let's at least agree to teach sound thinking principles and then back it up. And by that, what I mean, and it's probably going to deteriorate, but by that, what I mean is we can't say the Bible's true simply because the Bible says it's true. We have to critically analyze these things and teach the process of critical thinking rather than getting bogged down in arguing the facts. That's where I would go with it. Not sure how it would work out, but that's how I would deal with it.
Now, I'm imagining that some of our listeners that are raising children with a religious parent and a non-religious parent may not be about the belief system necessarily, but about the cultural heritage and the community given and entrenched in maybe a Lutheran church community. Now, Beth or Rich, would you say that perhaps there are some benefits to raising the daughter in a church community, despite teaching critical thinking and despite maybe her daughter or his daughter not believing necessarily in the infallibility of the Bible and things like that?
Well, again, I think it really depends on the church community that you're talking about. I'm an atheist. I don't know much about Lutherans or any specific section of Christianity, if I'm going to be perfectly honest. But I think that if I, as a non-believer, had a child with someone who was religious, I would not be opposed to that child going to church out of hand, but I would have to be comfortable with the church that the child was going to, and there would have to be some understanding that not both parents are religious. And if the church can't respect that or take steps to sort of actively work against the parent who is not a believer, then I don't think that it's fair for the other parent to want that child to go to that church. I think that with anything, when you're in a partnership, when you're in a marriage, you have to come to an agreement on these things, and not everybody is going to get their way. But I think that especially when you have a non-believer in the mix, you have to at least respect the fact that that non-believer exists and that that is their child too. And as long as that can happen, then I don't see any problem with it.
That's very good. One thing I would add to what Beth just said is this going to be a group that's going to put pressure on the kid for not believing? And if the group itself is not comfortable with you being a cultural Christian without being a believing Christian, then I would say you have to, at some point, that's going to open the child up to either ridicule or manipulation. And if that's part of the game plan, then I would have to say no, I can't subject the child to that. But if the group, and I would go to the pastor, I would say, are you comfortable with this? We're not raising our child as a Lutheran, but are you comfortable with the child being part of the culture of the church without actually taking on the dogmas of the church?
And that can be a very challenging proposition for parents to approach a pastor, I imagine. But I hope, Angelo, that you and your wife can come to an agreement on some of these things. And we wish you the best of luck with the beautiful challenge of raising a daughter. Again, we're Ask an Atheist. I'm Becky. With me are Beth and Rich. And we're just three atheists. We're not parenting experts, necessarily. Some of us are parents. Some of us are teachers. So I think the more opinions that you can get, the more experience experiences that you can listen to of others will help inform your path and your own decisions.
And I don't want to belabor the point, because I know that we have a lot of stuff to get through today. But one other thing that I would suggest, strongly suggest to Angelo, is take this experience that you have right now with your daughter and try to plan for the future. If you see possibilities of other conflicts coming up that you might have these difficult conversations, maybe start having that conversation now so that you and your wife can have more of a stable plan for the future with your daughter. And so she's not having to deal with, you know, heated discussions or anything like that in regard to this topic. That's just going to make it a hot button issue for her regardless. So good luck also.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Beth. We have another email from John. I really have a soft spot for this email, and I'll read it to us on the air and maybe get your opinions on this. John writes, "Recently, I have been experiencing what I consider to be a phenomena. Younger women would make eye contact, then make with the big doe eyes. That is all fine, but when they do it, their eyes are completely black.
Dun dun!
Can you explain this, and how should I respond to it? No one else so far will respond, and I would appreciate an answer." This may be a question actually for our resident skeptics, but we as atheists are also skeptics. So yeah. What do you guys think about this phenomena?
I think that there's a reason why people aren't responding. I think it's silly. I don't know what to say. We've already talked about it. It reminds me of Babylon 5 with the psychic who got messed with by a Vorlon and ended up having... I don't know. I don't know what to say.
I'm guessing it's either they are stoned on heroin, which makes the eyes really dilated.
They're a really good typist if they're that whacked out on...
or they might just have those contacts that make your eyes look like that. But most likely, there's a reason people aren't responding.
And possibly, John, you may be poking fun at us skeptics up here. We appreciate the poking fun, but I would say this probably, any kind of phenomena that looks supernatural or looks aberrant, look at it with a skeptical eye.
Yeah, even if it is solid black.
Maybe they have Lady Gaga contact lenses. Not sure. So I think we have one more email, and that's from Duncan from the internet. He jokes. And Rich, this was an email directed to you.
I love Duncan already. He says, "I hear you on..." It's too rich. "I hear you on the Ask an Atheist podcast and really like what you bring to the table. You also have an awesome voice. Thank you very much. I've been an atheist my entire life, so your podcast isn't really for me."
And what is your podcast,
My
Rich?
Podcast, Living After Faith. It's based on recovering from religion, and it's a place that people can come to hear about other people's story of how they went from religion of whatever type to become an atheist and the process of coming out. And part of the thing people will learn is it's not as easy as it looks. In fact, it will be the most difficult thing you've ever done in your life.
So if you're listening to this and you're interested in not just what atheists have to say, but what recent atheists, people who just have recently left religion, check out livingafterfaith.com.
Thank you.
What else does Duncan say, Rich?
He says, "Your podcast isn't for me, but I'm still subscribing to it. Anyways, I really enjoy hearing you on the Ask an Atheist podcast. I get excited whenever I realize Rich is a host on this episode. Thank you again. Thanks for what you're doing. It really is interesting to get the rational perspective from someone who was behind the pulpit for so long. Keep doing your thing." And I thank him for that. It was a hard journey. And I think the biggest part in the transformation was learning to think rather than feel. Instead of following your gut and going by faith only, learning to think. And that's the process that I try to bring to people is look at your thinking. And how is your thinking on this? If the thought process makes sense, then chances are your answer is going to make sense.
Yeah, and I have to say, Duncan, I completely agree with you. I always talk about Rich's voice, and I say it's like butter. Because I just like it so much. And I don't know if it's because I live in Texas and I just miss the southern thing. I don't know what it is. But yeah, I 100% agree. Rich, awesome voice. And
thank you.
That's one of the reasons when we were talking about doing this episode is, what is the topic today?
Our topic today that we're going to really get into the meat of is about Christian privilege.
And the reason why I sort of picked out the hosts that I didn't pick them out, but I strongly suggested having Rich on this episode and having Becky on this episode. Rich, for obvious reasons, he can sort of give us a perspective from both sides, especially since you were a pastor, weren't you?
20 years.
Yeah, you were in it. And and then Becky, you're Jewish. You're culturally Jewish, obviously.
I am Jewish ethnically and for a long time, very observant religious Jew as well. Contemporary egalitarian Jewish, but considered what it would be like to enter the rabbinate, was very active in temple leadership and youth leadership as well.
Yeah, and then I obviously come from the perspective of being atheist and being raised by non-religious people. So the three people that you have here, when we're talking about Christian privilege, I was trying to gather people who could talk about it from those unique perspectives, sort of from outside the majority group, or in Rich's case, from inside and then from outside the majority group. So hopefully, when we're going through this today, you can sort of learn from that. And that's exactly why we have Rich here. And he's such a great host. And I don't know. I just can't say nicer things about him. I'm trying to get him to blush. He doesn't blush. The man does not blush.
Well, thank you.
And so throughout the hour, if you have a call, if you have a question for Becky, Beth, or Rich, please call us at 253-584-1480. If you're thinking about calling but you're not quite sure, go to our website at askanatheist.tv, where you can submit a question by pressing that big red button. We'd love to hear from you after this short break.
Join the Ask an Atheist after party at Doyle's Public House. The Ask an Atheist crew will be there at 5 for good beers, food, and you're invited. You'll find a dozen beers on tap, including Stella, Guinness, Smithwick's Irish Ale, Twisted Thistle IPA, and Fuller's London Porter, as well as dozens of domestic and imported beers and bottles. Join us for Good Atheist Conversation and meet the crew today at 5 at Doyle's, 208 St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an integral part of your business. But that's not all. We can set you up with VoIP, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to helping your business succeed through and with technology. At Tacoma Telematics, we are committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask an Atheist, where you can call in at 253-584-1480, ask Rich, Beth, or myself, Becky, any questions. Any questions today where we're talking about Christian privilege. If you think that we are privileged or not privileged for being non-Christian, we'd love to hear your thoughts on that and your questions about that. But before we get started with that, let's talk about what actually privilege is. Beth, you're the expert on this one. Tell us about it.
Well, hopefully I can pull off being an expert on this one. The problem with privilege and talking about privilege generally is that it's a social construct. The privilege exists because majority exists. Privilege exists because the concept of normalcy exists. And when you have a concept of normalcy and you have a majority that fulfills that normalcy, the people who are left outside of that bubble are seen as the underprivileged. And the problem is that we can recognize underprivilege relatively easily. We recognize the poor. We recognize, you know, people who are generally marginalized in our society. But recognizing privilege is an entirely different beast, and it's far more complicated to sort of recognize it, especially if you're someone who benefits from it. So if we want to get into privilege, the first thing, it's always easier if we frame these things with definitions. So I've actually picked out a legal definition of privilege because it sort of encompasses the general definition as well. From West's Encyclopedia of American Law, privilege, a particular benefit, advantage, or immunity enjoyed by a person or class of people that is not shared with others. A power of exemption against or beyond the law, it is not a right, but rather exempts one from the performance of a duty, obligation, or liability.
So anyone can be privileged based on a particular identifying characteristic, or is it a group of people necessarily?
Well, when we talk about privilege in terms of society, we're talking about groups of people. There are individuals that enjoy privilege, but when we're talking about privilege, we're talking about groups. We're talking about it sort of in general terms. That's why when you're part of a privileged class, you shouldn't feel as though you have to apologize for it. It's not your fault. It's not my fault that I was born a white person. It's not Rich's fault that he was born a man.
Right.
It's not your fault, Becky, that you were born straight. These aren't things that we should feel guilty about. They're not things that we should feel like we need to apologize for. The issue comes from not being able to recognize privilege when it exists and not working towards making things fair, because that's essentially what we're talking about. We're not talking about taking anything away from anyone that they deserve. We're talking about situations where people are afforded more rights or afforded more opportunities or advantages simply because they belong to a certain group. And when you belong to that group, you may feel like you're getting something taken away when someone says, hey, it's not fair that this happens for you and it doesn't happen for everyone else. But the reason why there's that feeling of getting something taken away is because you've existed in that privilege for so long. For you, it's normal. But if you were outside of that group, you would very easily be able to see how it's not fair. And there are sort of examples of this that make it a little bit easier to understand. If we don't talk about Christian privilege, if instead we talk about, say, white privilege, that's something that in retrospect, you can look back to the pre-civil rights era, and white privilege is obvious. There were different schools that minorities had to go to that were less well-equipped, instances like this. Those are obvious occurrences of privilege. And the problem that we face when we're part of the underprivileged class, dealing with a privilege that's not widely recognized, is that you really have to fight to explain why it's not fair, why it isn't just you wanting more of somebody else's stuff.
I think a more recent issue that we could point to for privilege would be straight marriage versus gay marriage. And that's something we're dealing with right now.
Yeah, and that's that's another thing is the main ones that I have written down are white privilege, male privilege, and straight privilege. And white privilege and male privilege, even to a lesser extent, are pretty well accepted generally in society. But even straight privilege at this point is something that we still have to fight about. Exactly like you said, when it comes to marriage, why can we explain away the rights of these people based on what? It's popular opinion, isn't it? And that actually is really closely related to Christian privilege because
right.
of the Christian perspective on homosexuality.
Exactly. That's the only argument I can come up with against it. And if someone has a different argument and would like to say, I would like to be enlightened on that, and the number to call 584-1480, give me a call, let me know. The only perspective I can see against gay marriage is a religious, a line of religious thinking. And other than that, what is the issue? And if there is a bona fide issue, I'd like someone to call and tell me. I mean that sincerely, because I just don't see it.
No, definitely. I completely agree with you. And I don't understand either the explanations for it. But again, that's the problem with privilege, is that when you've always been able to get married, it seems like something's being taken away from you when other people are afforded the same right. But if you think about, I mean, it's hard for me to even say that because in my mind, it automatically pops up. No, that's not right. But there are people who do hold that position.
Now, Beth, who thought of this this perspective or this framework for thinking about problems? Where did this come from? Was it in response to anything else? Because privilege and sort of the sociocultural theory surrounding it is kind of a new hot topic in universities and in cultural studies programs.
It is. It's a response to oppression. That's essentially what it is. Is that when you look at the social effects of oppression, privilege is one of those sort of responses to that. And this is something that is very, very common in human culture. It's something that has existed since human culture has existed. You could argue that. A really good example of this in a different culture is the caste system in India. In India, it's not as prevalent now in India as it used to be, but there was a caste system where it would go from the Brahmins, the very highest caste, down to untouchables. And this was an accepted system that they worked within in that country for a very long time. It's still implemented in some areas today. And it essentially says, these are the people that are good, and these are the people that are others. And that's a term that you'll hear a lot with this sort of social theory as well, is the concept of other. And that would be any sort of marginalized group of people. And the idea is that if we're really working toward a culture that is as democratically driven and as fair to every person who exists within that culture, then we have to actively not only work against privilege, but be able to recognize it and be able to deal with it in a manner that's fair to everybody, so that nobody does get things taken away from them simply because they're a man or simply because they're white. But at the same time, people who have been marginalized are able to have the same successes as everyone else. And the way that you do that is that you take those blocks of privileges away.
So if we're really talking about people being able to be successful, can't we just work really hard and earn what we work for? I mean, if we have, as atheists, want something in particular, shouldn't we just work hard?
That's a really good that's a really good question, because it seems pretty cut and dry in terms of those in terms of that idea that if you work hard, you're going to succeed. But the problem is that, like, take white privilege, for instance. If you were to go back civil rights, and you were to say to a black man, well, all you have to do is work really hard and you would be able to succeed, right? Well, if we look at that, that's not actually the case, because the job is going to go more, if it's a job that deals with the public, it's going to go to a white man. If it's a job, that sort of thing. And so when we talk about Christian privilege, and let's kind of move the conversation towards Christian privilege, since that's sort of what we're trying to focus on today. If an atheist works just as hard, or if a Jewish person works just as hard as a Christian, shouldn't they be able to? Yes, they 100% should. And if privilege wasn't an issue, then they would be able to. And the problem is recognizing whether or not there are instances of privilege that are not allowing that to happen. Because the fact is that you can work really hard your whole life and still not get the sort of success that somebody who was born into a rich family or someone who has connections with the community or whatever has. And there's a certain amount of that that just has to be the luck of the draw of how you were born. But if we can even things out as much as we can, and that has to do with recognizing privilege, working against it, trying to make things as even, then it's more likely that someone can work just as hard as someone else and come to the same sort of end result.
So if you think that you've benefited from Christian privilege, please give us a call at Ask an Atheist at 253-584-1480. Conversely, if you think that you have had Christian privilege provide some stumbling blocks for your success in life, give us a call or email us at askanatheist.tv.
I could be on both sides of that, actually. As a pastor, I, at the time, just assumed, because of who I was and what I was, that that's the way things were supposed to be. And I think a lot of it is people don't recognize, really, the privilege. For instance, my wife was recently in the hospital, and several times during the process, they asked, what religion? And at one point, I said, atheist. And the girl looks down and says, that's not one of my choices. I said, choose none. She said, okay, none. And I said, will there be an atheist chaplain, so to speak, coming to visit us? And she said, we don't have any of those. So a Christian in the hospital can count on a visit from a person trained to be non-denominational and to attend to their needs. That doesn't necessarily mean that an atheist doesn't have the same needs or similar needs, or that a person in that more of a liaison for the patient role wouldn't be an effective thing.
Now I can hear my little devil's advocate speaking up and saying, well, clearly, Rich, if your wife wasn't able to get a chaplain, you know, counseling to her needs, there are all kinds of therapists and psychologists and social workers that do that. And that's clearly not anything akin to being prohibited from a job because of your race, or being prohibited from joining a better school because of your race, you know, prior to the civil rights era. Is this really an issue for atheists or for people that are not Christian?
I did take it to the next level and said I had 20 years experience as a chaplain. Do they have a residency program for secular chaplains? I was told no.
Ah, I see.
So. And that actually goes into my next point, which is there's a lot of argument when you talk about Christian privilege about whether or not it actually even exists.
So it does exist. I can answer that.
It's a fair question. It's fair. So let's go down the line. And the first thing is legally. Legally, does any sort of privilege exist? Since that's sort of the very first and most important aspect of that could really affect generally anyone's life that isn't Christian.
And arguably, it's a little bit easier to change than a cultural perspective.
Yeah,
if you can
exactly.
change a legal, if you can change the execution of law, then there will be conceivably some stumbling blocks removed right then and there.
And plenty of people will say that that's the first step. That's the first thing that you would do if you were trying to actively abolish this. But let's look through. If we look at Pennsylvania State Constitution, Article 1, Section 4, no person who acknowledges the being of a God and a future state of rewards and punishment shall, on account of his religious sentiments, be disqualified to hold any office or place of trust or profit under his commonwealth. That law, the reason why that jumps out at me is that it's basically saying that no person who acknowledges you can believe anything that you want and you're not going to get, but it doesn't protect the people who don't believe. And that's an important thing that's missing in there, because I'm a person who doesn't believe. And so, can I go to Pennsylvania and can I get this amended to actually include anyone? Why is this even in there in the first place? And there are other ones that are actually a little bit more pointed. The Maryland's Declaration of Rights, Article 37, no religious test ought ever to be required as a qualifier for any office or profit trust in this state. Awesome. Other than a declaration of belief in the existence of God. And that is God with a capital G.
Well, isn't this just religious privilege? Why is this specifically Christian, Beth?
Because the God with a capital G is the Christian God. That's who you are referring to in our culture when you do capital G-O-D God.
But Beth, Jews and Muslims both believe in that same God. We're all the monotheistic religions. Why is that necessarily the Christian God?
Well, it's one of those, that's a fair question. And it's one of those things where you need to look through and you need to go, okay, honestly, do you think that they are including the Jewish God when they're taught, when Mitt Romney is giving a speech about God, when they're writing these letters about God, when the founding fathers are talking about God, are they talking about the Christian God? Are they talking about, and this is one of those things where it's up in the air. You can honestly make that argument that that's not a Christian privilege. That's just a religious privilege. But really at that point, aren't you just splitting hairs in terms of who is receiving this privilege?
If I may, I think I now have a clearer idea on that. And I think that if we were to say a declaration or belief in the existence of God, the reason that strikes me as Christian is because it doesn't say a declaration of belief in the existence of God or Adonai or Hashem or
right.
Allah.
Exactly.
Or the Great Mother, or the Creator.
But the fact that they are able to require belief in anything is a point of privilege. I mean, that is the person in the majority saying, I can make you believe what I believe, at least to some degree.
And that's a good point. We're talking about majority here. And I guarantee you that if we were living in a country where the majority of people in that country were Islamic, that would be the God that we were talking about.
Right.
And so you sort of have to look back to what is the majority here? Who are the people who are writing these laws? And there's sort of that understanding that's the God who they're talking about. And this goes hand in hand with different legislation to try to get the Ten Commandments, which again could be a reference to the Jewish God as well. But you sort of have to deal with it in the context of all of it together. And when you do that, it's sort of obvious. If we look at it politically, not just legally, We see things like in Florida, there's a big sort of debate going on, and it's gotten to the point where it's legal now, about Christian prayers that are being said before council meetings. And this sort of thing, it began as Christian prayer, and then they invited, I think, one rabbi to come talk, so that then it became, oh no, it's just religious, we include all religions. Then they
so that would be sort of ecumenical in nature, to try and downplay any kind of Christian privilege?
Exactly. To where it's like, oh well, it's not just Christians, it's anyone who's religious. And again, that just sort of creates the image of the other in terms of being a non-religious person. But it's not just when you're talking about privilege, too, you have to be careful. Specific things that people say aren't necessarily indicative of privilege. For instance, George Bush, when he was president, and I believe this was George Bush Sr., when asked about atheists and whether or not they should be considered citizens, said, no, I don't think that atheists should be considered as citizens, nor should they be considered as patriots. This is one nation under God.
Do you agree with George Bush? Call us. Call the atheists at 253-584-1480.
And the reason why this comment in and of itself isn't indicative of privilege is because it's the man's opinion, and he can have whatever opinion he wants. But the response to that comment, that is what shows the sort of all-encompassing atmosphere of Christian privilege in America. Because if he had said that about any other group, put any other group in place of atheists with that comment, and there would have been an extreme response from the public, from the media. He would have been, you know, asked to definitely apologize, if not possibly have some sort of legal action against him for making a comment like that. That is not acceptable with any other group. And yet, when it's said about atheists, I remember there was some response, but it certainly was not the sort of response that you would have gotten if he had said that about African-American people, if he had said that about a Jewish person, if he had said that about even a Scientologist. I don't think would have been ignored as much as the comment about atheists.
What about immigrants? Do you think that he would be reviled against that? Or does that represent a citizenship privilege akin to a Christian privilege?
I think that does. I think that it would depend on what the economics of the nation we're at the moment. Because if you look historically, this nation starts hating on immigrants as soon as we start losing money, as soon as we get economically on uneven ground.
Have you benefited from privilege? Call us at 253-584-1480. This is Ask an Atheist. You can reach us online at askanatheist.tv. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be back after this.
Secular humanism is a non-theistic view of the universe built on a foundation of reason, science, and democracy. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking, and we hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of free thinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. For information on how you can be a part of the humanist activities in the Puget Sound area, become a member of the Humanists of Washington today. Visit humanistsofwashington.org.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an integral part of your business. But that's not all. We can set you up with VoIP, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to helping your business succeed through and with technology. At Tacoma Telematics, we are committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back to Ask an Atheist, where we're accepting your calls till the top of the hour, 253-584-1480. We're talking today about Christian privilege. Beth, you had something to say about this.
Yeah, and again, this is one of those topics that it's a complicated topic. It's kind of a heady one It's difficult to get through, and I apologize if we've sort of been hammering on the same point. But I really want to make it clear that privilege exists. Christian privilege, at least from my point of view, obviously exists. But if you're a Christian and you're listening to this program and you feel like you're being attacked in any way, I don't want that to be the case, because it's not an individual's fault. It's not your fault for being Christian. It's not, or, you know.
I love that perspective. it's not your fault that you're a Christian.
I know. Just please don't take that out of context. But this is an example. This was written by a sophomore in college, and this was a response to the atheist convention in Des Moines that's happening. They put up billboards that were advertising for that convention. And this young man had a lot of issues with these billboards. And this, to me, when you read this, this is what speaking from the position of privilege sounds like.
What does he sound like, Beth?
He basically says, you know, I've got atheist friends, I'm a cool guy, blah, blah, blah. Pretty normal. Then he talks about, then I see that there is an atheist convention here in Des Moines. Everyone needs conventions, from atheists to Lutherans to stamp collectors. Here's the rub, though. This convention, yeah, it's on Easter weekend. Sort of a big weekend if you're a Christian. One of those main staples of faith. They are deliberately doing it on Easter, too. Well, is that that's just good advertising, isn't it? Cheese some people off and have your convention spreads like wildfire. So that little excerpt, it goes on. And
I actually spoke to David Silverman, president of American Atheists, about why it's on that weekend.
And what did he say?
What he told me is, he said, number one, most atheists don't have any plans that weekend. It's a weekend they've left open. They're not going to be with family and friends. They're open. Number two, travel rates are extremely inexpensive because it's not one of those holiday weekends like Christmas where everybody travels to go somewhere, but people stay in. So it's the most inexpensive weekend you can travel. And also, you find out that your hotels are empty because people are home for that holiday. That's where they stay home. So it's an economic decision on their part. It's a decision where atheists are free to travel, where travel is cheap and hotels are cheap, and that is the total basis of their decision.
So what I might say to this young man is, it's not really about you.
Exactly.
Exactly. And that right there, that's what privilege looks like. It's someone who's, you cannot get upset if I'm someone who loves Earth Day. I love Earth Day more than any other day, 365 days a year. I cannot get upset if someone decides to pick up the trash on Earth Day. It's my thing. It's not their thing. And the idea that we need to tiptoe around certain days because other people believe in them, the idea that you would even perpetuate that as a serious concern is, in my opinion, an example of privilege. So we're going to, at this point, I think we should start talking to you guys about your experiences with this.
What I, you know, Christian privilege, from my perspective, there was a time in life I wouldn't even thought it existed while I was living in that privilege. But as I take a step out, it's amazing how much I see it. For instance, in my podcast, I encourage people to get medical help if they're dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder or things like this from leaving Christianity. And I had a person contact me and say, I am in a southern city and I need someone who is an atheist that I can go to, because the next thing I'm going to say is, don't go to a Christian counselor or a Christian psychologist or psychiatrist, because number one, they're not going to understand your issue. And number two, they're probably going to try to steer you back to Christianity, which isn't going to help you. So he was looking for someone and couldn't find them. I have another friend who is a psychologist, Dr. Daryl Ray, and I contacted him and said, have you got some contacts in the area? He said, we have to be very careful with the way we handle this, because if it gets out that this person is an atheist, it will ruin their practice and their life. So we had to walk gingerly to get this person who needed help to a person who could help them, because the person who can help is afraid that if all the Christians find out I'm an atheist, my practice will crash.
Where was this? What city?
Dallas, Texas.
Oh, goodness.
Well, to be fair also, isn't it possible that there are Christian psychiatrists or psychologists that can be impartial? I mean, not everyone who is going to be seen in your practice is your particular denomination. Do you think that it's possible for Christians to actively account for and fight against their societally bestowed privilege?
You know, my experience was, and I went to a psychologist in Seattle who was supposed to be able to help me. And I went to several before I found an atheist who really got a lot of things. And his Christian, he was a Christian counselor. And I explained to him that I was an atheist and really didn't want to. So his first description was, don't take the Bible literally, read a commentary. I said, dude, I had 2,000 books in my library. I've read more commentaries than you can imagine. And I don't want to just swallow the next thing someone's handing me to swallow. And we went through like three or four sessions. And finally he said, you know, I can't help you. Now, it's important. His idea of helping me was helping me reassimilate back into Christianity. That was at Swedish Hospital in Seattle.
Oh, goodness.
I mean, we're talking, this is not some fly-by-night he threw up a shingle because he went to school. We're talking about a professional, real-life, medical place that you're going for help, and his purpose was to reconvert to Christianity, and thought that I was the one wrong because I didn't accept that.
Well, and what I think is the most telling part of that entire story is that in Dallas, Texas, you wouldn't be no one would question you if you said, look, I'm having these problems, I'm a Christian, I just feel more comfortable talking to a Christian therapist.
Right.
No one would question that. But the fact that an atheist is in the exact same position, I'm having some problems, I would feel more comfortable talking to an atheist, and that's treated in an entirely different way, to the point where this poor therapist is worried about losing their practice.
Right.
If they openly treat someone as an atheist. And I think that right there is a pretty telling example of privilege. If one group can look for help with no problem and another group has to covertly find help, there's a problem there.
It's an underground railroad, only instead of color, we're talking religion.
Yeah, yeah, or lack definitely. Thereof.
So.
So, Becky, I kind of want to get more into your experience as a Jewish person.
Sure,
I would say
sure.
Jewish person. That sounds so awkward. Am I supposed to say Jew? I feel really bad if I say that.
I feel no offense to Jewish person or Jew. If you said Jewish, I may
Jewish.
I may alert you to the weighted negative connotations historically associated with that term. But I'm fine being called a Jewish person or a Jew. I grew up in a Jewish household and several different congregations since I moved around as a child and as a young adult. And I definitely experienced being not an atheist, but experienced the other end of Christian privilege as a child, certainly growing up as a minority in these areas. I have two really sort of poignant examples. One is my own, and that was in seventh grade, the day before December vacation. We had a reading teacher that said, okay, well, you know, not many kids are here today. Some kids took off for vacation early, so we're going to do some fun puzzle games today. And they were all little sort of word puzzles based on the titles and first lines of Christmas carols. And since I have family, a great deal of family that are not Jewish, I was familiar with Christmas traditions, and we would help participate in trimming the tree and things like that. And I had even attended, you know, different church services as an observer, as a visitor, but I didn't know the titles, the specific titles of Christmas carols. I could hum Frosty the Snowman, but
yeah, exactly.
The fact that the teacher, through no malice of her own, said this is a fun activity, leads one little Jewish 11-year-old to feel deficient in a particular context, really was representative to me. That really shines as an example of someone acting upon Christian privilege as if Christianity, as if Christmas carols are the normal course of things, and that anyone who doesn't know them is considered aberrant or strange or a little bit off.
Well, and I think that that's a really, really good example, too, of how you can act in a way that you can't even conceive of how someone could be hurt or someone could feel left out, just because it's so accepted that people are going to know, you know, Christmas carols. And when you told me that story, I was amazed by my reaction because I had never even thought about it. I had never thought about how a Jewish child or, you know, a non-practicing, a non-Christmas celebrating atheist kid, because I always celebrated Christmas as a child, might not know the names of songs and how isolating that is as a child when you're put in that sort of position. Because when you're a kid, you don't know, you can't express why it's not fair. You just know that it's not fair.
And one might say, well, you know, suck it up. It's one day. It was a fun thing. It's an ignorable day. She wasn't grading you on it. But the thing is that when those things are compounded over and over from for children, for adolescents, for young adults, for people struggling, you know, adults, anything like that, that has a serious effect. And research really, points to when people are constantly told through, you know, covert messages that they are deficient, they are aberrant. It really leads to limited productivity. And that's what we're talking about with privilege, right?
No, it certainly does. And that's a really good point, is that the reason why privilege is such an issue isn't necessarily because you get more and I get less. That's a big part of it. But really what it does is that those kids who grow up in this sort of environment suffer from it. We know this. We know this from different research that they did back in the 1950s when Johnson was president, when he sort of started all of the different leg up programs for minorities. It was shown that living segregated, living as if you are somehow different, maybe not even worse or better, but even being distinguished as different has a severe mental impact on any child growing up in that environment. And that's really the most troubling part of privilege, in my opinion, is the fact that there are kids who are growing up who feel like they are not as good as any other kid simply because they don't belong in the bigger group.
I think professionally, though, is also a very big concern, because I know that there are offices, there are places you don't want to work if you're not a Christian, or at least not let people know that you're not a Christian. There was a recent case where one of the organizations in our area that people give money to help out in relief operations actually fired some people because they weren't their brand of Christian, and were upheld that they can do that. You know, I understand, okay, that makes you a religious organization, but I shouldn't give you my money to help in relief because your primary thing is a religious organization. By the same token, if I can't work at certain organizations unless I'm their brand of Christian, how much more is that amplified if you're an absolute atheist?
So, that's a good point. And one of the things that I know that we're running out of time, but one of the things that I really wanted to get to was to ask you, Rich, what you would say to people who are religious, who are Christian, who don't believe that Christian privilege exists. How can we help people see this?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not sure that you can, and I try to do that. I say things that are intentionally provocative for a purpose of explaining to them that it's no more provocative than you asking if we'll pray before a meal, or you're asking for prayers for your friend, or some of the things that Christians say and take for granted is their privilege to say. Some of the things I say are really no more provocative than that, but it sends them into a rage sometimes. And that what I'm trying to get you to realize is I don't go into a rage when you say the things you say. I don't get all upset when you say, please pray. I just blow it off and let it wash over me. I don't care, you know. But I think that to get people to realize they have a privilege, sometimes you have to shock them. Sometimes you have to say something the other way. And you mentioned it earlier, you know, with the statement George H.W. Bush. Mm-hmm. If he had said that about African-Americans or any other group, there would have been an incredible outrage, but because it was atheist, people just kind of let it flow. But sometimes you have to make that statement. Sometimes you have to make that provocative thing and say that provocative thing for people to realize, and you'll probably still have to explain it to them because they think you're just being mean. But when they actually hear you say, I'm saying the same thing you're saying, just from the other perspective, but for some reason, you don't give me the right to say that. I think it's important.
So I think that's really the take-home message as we think about privilege and Christian privilege is anything that you think of from your perspective as being normal may not be normal for everyone. And just because it's normal for you does not mean that someone who thinks differently or acts differently is somehow aberrant and therefore lesser. And we can make accommodations for that and think, well, you know what? It's different from my practice, my perspective, my viewpoint, but it doesn't make them lesser. As we wrap up this hour, we do want to thank Russell in Sunny Isles Beach for giving us a large donation. We at Ask an Atheist do accept contributions to keep our show going. We are very appreciative for our advertisers. And if you would like to make a contribution, please check us out at askanatheist.tv, where you can make some contributions to our project to keep us going.
And if you're interested in advertising as well, definitely you can contact us through the website askanatheist.tv, ask a question. We can set up advertising too.
So we do thank you for listening today and for being with me, Becky, and with me was Beth. Beth Lehman, you had some great words to talk about Christian privilege and frame it in a non-confrontational way.
Thank you. I hope it made sense.
And Rich Lyons, who also runs Living After Faith podcast. Rich, thank you so much for being with us and giving us the perspective of a former pastor who has been on both sides of that coin.
Thanks for letting me be here. I always love it when I get to be on Ask an Atheist.
Our crew today includes call screener Sam Mulvey and production assistant Mike Gillis. We're going to be meeting up today at Doyle's in downtown Tacoma at 2nd and St. Helens. That's our crossroads. You can meet with producers Mike, Beth, and Sam and meet up with our other crew members today. We love having you listen every week. We're here from 3 to 4 p.m. We're also archived online at askanatheist.tv. You can also go to askanatheist.tv to submit any questions if you think of questions at a later date. Well, I think that's what we've got for the hour today. Do we have any more concluding thoughts on Christian privilege? Any more personal stories?
Yeah, I think if I'm going to leave people with one idea, it's that Christian privilege, if you're a Christian, you shouldn't feel guilty about Christian privilege. Privilege exists in any society based on the majority of the people that exist in that society. But what you can do is you can start trying to recognize it. And if you see it, you can take the steps, whatever steps that are able for you to take, to work against it. And that's what anyone would do if they were in your shoes, if they were in the position to do it for you. We would do it for you.
Well, thank you so much, Beth. Ask an Atheist is a production of NEDM Media. We hope to see you next week.
Keeping you informed, this is KLAY, Lakewood, Tacoma.